Welcome everyone to this week's Elemental Evolution. So I hope everyone's had a fantastic week with the post-solar eclipse that everyone got to experience, or at least in the United States. It, for me, was an interesting experience. I was a little disappointed. I was expecting more from the eclipse, maybe some aliens coming out of the sky, or, I don't know, people just simultaneously combusting. I don't know. I had a whole different vision of what was going to happen, and it seemed to go by very quickly, and it wasn't that dynamic. The after effects of the eclipse seemed to be rocking a lot of people. And so this show is probably, it's going to be the perfect dynamic for that, I believe, because we all know Chuck Ocelli. We've listened to his shows. We've watched him go and grow from different networks to going on his own to producing and becoming quite a name for himself, but also in the conspiracy world. And so we've gotten to see that side of him. We've gotten to see him kind of, I don't want to say attack those that are in question, but in a lot of ways, that's what it is. He brings people in and has a lot of great questions that puts everything into perspective and puts everyone on the spot. So today, we're going to do that to Chuck. We have Chuck Ocelli with us today. Hi, Chuck.
Yeah. How you doing, Sherry? Definitely a different sort of show. Sure, we could talk about plenty of other things. Maybe we'll get to them later on. You know, I'll be presenting at one of the JFK conferences this year because I've been a researcher on that for a long time. There's a lot of things going on that we could discuss, the continuously evolving Ocelli brand, if you will, at Ocelli.com, et cetera, et cetera. But that won't be the subject today, will it?
No, it won't. In fact, so I'm really excited about this next guest, and I hope that everyone will help me welcome. And I hope I do not butcher your name. This is, it's something that I'm known for doing. And so please help me welcome Gabrielle Zabrowski. Is that right?
Perfectly said, Sherry. Oh. Yes. Hi. Thank you. You did it perfect.
Oh, I nailed it. So
you nailed it.
You are a fantastic guest because you are Chuck Ocelli's sister.
Yes, and I am.
And this is a side that most people don't get to see of Chuck, is the personal side, especially the personal side of his history. He has talked about it and he has put some things out there, and especially in shows where he is trying to help people with certain addictions or types of poverty, you know, different things that he's experienced. He really does try to bring people to a space of peace with that. And so going into this discussion is going to be dynamic because you were not connected to Chuck in your younger years. Is that correct?
That is right.
And
we were not. We were raised separately. Yes.
Right. And we're going to go into that a little bit more, but you had a very different upbringing than Chuck. Is that right also?
That is correct, Joe. Yes, we did. It was very different.
And so I guess where I'd like to start is I'd like to start with you telling me a little bit about how you and Chuck are related and how it is that you became so estranged for such a long period of time. And then we're going to jump into the dynamic of both stories and how the reconnection has happened, because I think that that's pretty profound as well.
Okay. Okay. That sounds great. Shall I begin or?
Yes, please.
Start?
That's great. And Chuck,
okay.
When you have something to say, jump in.
Yeah,
add in.
But believe it or not, I'm going to reserve myself for most of this time and let her speak for herself quite a bit. I want to fill in just one thing that you said during the lead up here and give Gabby a minute to think. And sorry, yeah, I do reflexively call you Gabby.
That's absolutely fine.
But the thing is that I have been perfectly willing to explore my own history in, you know, like you mentioned about addiction. I fully admitted, you know, that I had a problem which I attempted to use to lift others up with and explain to them that they could escape it if they were currently caught up in it. When the issue of child abuse came up, I absolutely spoke to it, you know, from my own experiences, various other things when they talk about the culture, the subcultures, and people make very flippant descriptions about individuals and exactly how much they matter as human beings. I wanted to give a voice to those people. So that is what I was able to do. Now, this situation, which we're about to discuss here, is going to touch on part of that too, because I also talked about being a survivor of suicide and things like that. Not just in my own personal realm, but being somebody who survives after a close family member commits suicide, which will be part of this story as well. So this is going to be, you know, a fairly unpleasant story in some ways. I want people to recognize that and understand.
I think what's fascinating is seeing both spectrums from my point of view, from the outside view, from knowing and talking with you and now getting to know and seeing Gabrielle. It is dynamic to me to see the connections and how strong it is in the love field, but also the distinct differences in the upbringing and how that turned and almost manufactured your life today. I mean, we've talked about it so many times, Chuck, about how what we know and what we grow up in affects us. It changes and makes us and develops almost what we perceive to be in this reality. So I want to jump back to Gabby, and I want you to, again, like, kind of describe, and Chuck has told the story, so we want to hear it from your perspective, how it is that you became separated from Chuck, and then how it is that you were kind of reared, and then what the reconnection has been like.
Okay, sure. Thank you. I will, you know, it's Chuck and I, we have the same father. We have different mothers. So my mother, Sharon, met our father, Frank, down in Long Branch, New Jersey, and were together. I think Chuck would probably know better than I would. I haven't always remembered all the details of my mom's stories about our father. But so they met. They had my mother and my father got – our father got pregnant with me. Chuck was already born. Chuck, I think you were – were you three when I was born?
Well, let's see now. You were born in 76, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think based on the month, I was, either just barely four or I was three. Yeah. So,
okay.
Because
in
76, I would have turned four in April. So there you go.
Okay. Yeah. So in any event, my mom, Chuck actually clarified this with me, that my mother lived in the same apartment complex as Chuck and our father and Chuck's mother. When my mother became pregnant, her family was obviously not very thrilled of the fact that, A, she's pregnant out of wedlock. And so in order to, I guess, prevent, I guess, you know, for the family name.
Right.
Yeah. They said that you should go, for the time being of your pregnancy, you should go live in Ohio with your older sister, until you have the baby. So that's what she did. When she was pregnant with me, she moved, to Ohio and lived with my Aunt Donna and her husband. I believe that during that time, I know that my mom did meet Chuck because she spoke about him prior to Chuck and I reconnecting. But she did know Chuck. She was around Chuck. I think it's several times. I'm not sure. Chuck, again, you may know.
Yeah, you want me to fill in the blanks here a little bit?
Yeah,
I would love that.
Okay. Here's the thing. My parents were married, and it was a very strange thing. My mother was 16 at the time and my father was 21. So a few years later and only a few months after they were married, because they were married because I was on the way, a few months after they were married, I was here, and they were a young couple in that apartment complex. And quite honestly, my father was somebody who liked the ladies, okay? And this is not to disparage your mom, you understand, but your mom was...
Oh, no, I don't. No.
Yeah,
no,
I mean...
She was a willing participant, so I'm not... no offense taken. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is that your mom was one of them. And one that that he was quite fond of, because he had actually brought me along to go see this particular woman, and I have a recollection of her to some degree. Saw a picture of her recently, and have to say that it made a lot more sense in my head once I saw the picture, and stuff like that. But, you know, to me, this was just, I don't know, a pretty lady that my dad was bringing me around, and I had no idea what was going on. And I did not learn about Gabrielle's existence until a couple of years later. But I'll let her pick up the story from here.
No, Chuck, you actually are a better storyteller than I am, and your recall of the details are better as well. So I appreciate you filling in, and feel free to do so, anything that I might miss or skip over. But I thank you for adding, which I did, I failed to do, that your mom and our father were married. And my mother, if, for lack of a better, she was the mistress.
This also explains partially why her family wanted her to go elsewhere. Because, correct, look, she had been, you know, impregnated by a married guy, regardless of the fact that he was 24 or 25, depending on when they knew that you were on the way. You know, right, this is all very young people, and I'm not sure what your mother's age was then, but I'm willing to bet that she was a couple of years younger than he was, because that's about how his taste went, quite honestly.
Yeah, I think my mom, she's 65, so we can do the math. I thought she was 26.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Our father was born in 1950, which means so that, go ahead.
She was born in 52, so she was a couple of years younger.
Like I said, this is about his MO, and you know, I had a frank discussion with Gabby about this, so this isn't a surprise to her, by the way.
No. I have a question, because you said, and I'm not trying to exploit, please don't think I'm trying to turn this into a Jerry Springer, but it's almost like your dad was kind of, I mean, you could have other siblings maybe, huh? I mean, he was out. What was he? I mean, he seems like
good point.
But it seemed like he was out. He had several. I'm not trying to put anybody in any kind of classification, but he liked women. Let's just say that.
Yeah. On all accounts that I have collected, and I've collected some strange ones, some of which I described to Gabby that I'm not going to describe here. I will tell you that that's true. He had quite the appetite for interaction with women. How about that?
Okay, yeah, there we go. So basically, your family, your mom's family, was like, oh no, this is not happening. We're gonna swoop you up. You're going to Ohio. And in my mind, she met Prince Charming, and everything was great. But please go on with the story. Maybe it wasn't that at all.
Sure. Yeah. No, it was not. So my mother did, I think our father came out to visit my mother when she was about 8 months pregnant, she said. He took a train out to Dayton and met her. I don't know how many days he spent. It didn't seem like he spent that long there, and then returned back to New Jersey. So I think my mother also said that he was quite disappointed once she did. So I was born, and she called Frank to tell him that, you know, your child has been born. And he was quite disappointed about the fact that I was a girl, and because he wanted a boy. That's what she said to me. So from that point on, I think shortly after I was born in March, our father died in September, so I never got a chance, or he never got a chance to meet me. And I believe my mother found out of our father's death from Sandy, which would be your aunt, or our aunt, right? Right, Chuck?
Technically speaking, that would be both of our aunt, and that would be his brother's wife. Active, like sort of, you know how there's always somebody in the family that keeps everybody informed of who's died and who's gotten married and who's had kids.
I always be off that list, I just want to say. Like, I never get the call.
Listen, I don't get those calls either, but I've heard tell that there are people in the families that do this, and apparently our Aunt Sandy was the one at that time.
So your mom gets the call, and if I'm not being too much, he committed suicide, correct?
That's the official story.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, regardless of what actually happened, the story is he committed suicide. Who knows what really happened? Because we all, you know, I'd love to jump into a whole bunch of conspiracy, but we're not going to go there today. So he commits suicide. She's got this new baby. Then what?
Then she just stays in Ohio. I believe she lives with, her sister and her, and my uncle for a while. And then she gets a job. I know I go into daycare and she works. I'm sure she's met several people in the interim, but she ends up meeting my dad, who I know now. His name is Bill. She met him when I was about 4 or 5. And at that point, they were both working at a news station in Dayton, Ohio. And, they got engaged and got married. So I think they were married when I was 5, I believe, 5 or 6.
And so now what is the status as far as being reared? Because when you know, Chuck was reared in a way that went, in my opinion, down a road of once the dad committed suicide, pretty much everything died with him. You know, the mother collapsed, became a drug addict, you know, all of these things
proceeded.
And so your mom went in a different direction. She got a job. She worked at this station, and then she meets your dad. Did they have a good relationship? Did you grow up in happiness? Did you grow up in craziness, or was it?
That's a really good point. I should probably backtrack. As much as it may seem that, you know, my mom had a very, I would say tumultuous, she made some bad choices, and I don't think her life was very easy, especially with me. By no means did, I think her connection and the support she had, from her sister and brother-in-law were huge. But it was not by any means easy. My aunt and uncle did not have a lot of money. Even though our family back east, you know, some of them did have a lot of money, it wasn't as if they were just shipping my mom money. So my mom and I lived, you know, in apartments with cockroaches. It was very hard for a while. And then, yes, she met Bill and things got a little better because my dad is a very stable guy. And I think that kind of helped. My mom also suffered from alcoholism. She is an alcoholic, but she is a recovering alcoholic. So she struggled with that, and stopped drinking, I would say, 4 years into my parents' marriage, and was sober for, you know, until now. So when you say that, you know, it was difficult. I don't want to, you know, play what was more difficult, but I wouldn't want to paint my mom, you know, from the time of my Frank's death to, it was not easy for my mom. I know that she struggled a lot.
Family came in. It wasn't like your family came in and gave her the princess life or anything like that.
No. Oh no, 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 no. Cause that's not, that wasn't the, she made a mistake and she's got to live with her choice and she's got to make her own way. That's just kind of the way, my family, you know, we were taught. So, and I think she did a pretty good job of it. I mean, luckily she met a man who, you know, was actually quite different than our father. I think he likes women a lot, but he just was a little bit more able to focus and had a good job. He had gone to college. My father went to Purdue University. He was a computer field technician. He's an engineer. So, you know, he's a real smart guy. He's just a really smart guy. So I think she met someone who, counteracted her wild side, which my mom does have that wild side, which is probably why she and, our father connected. They probably enjoyed each other and had a good time.
Well, yeah, here's the interesting thing. You're hearing a lot of chemicals come up, in the discussion. Yeah, my mom was a junkie and all that, but my father was somebody who definitely enjoyed his chemistry set as well. Also, you know, having suffered a bit after, coming back from Vietnam, he was definitely in a damaged sort of headspace. But that all being said, he wasn't a complete disaster. He was a very charming sort of guy at the same time, a little bit, criminal minded, honestly.
Obviously have a lot of moral base. I'm not trying to slam him. Obviously he's dead, but it's like, you know, you take your kid to your mistress's house And that's how you know that he really likes her. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's kind of one of those things where he was playing, because he's young, I'm sure, and that was kind of the way it was in those days, but it was like, he was really playing it up. You know, he had a lot going on there in that time. And you, unfortunately, Chuck, in my opinion, were left to the wayside, because as soon as he passed, your mom did not meet somebody who came in and was stable and connected and all of those things. You ended up getting thrown into a bigger mess, where I think what Gabby was saying is, you know, if I'm understanding this properly, it's kind of like both of your mothers had some pretty serious issues as far as dependency and probably, you know, daddy issue. You know, you can go down the list of what they had going on for them to why they would be attracted to this guy. But
oh yeah, but you know, to make summary judgments, I wouldn't do that necessarily about her mom. I mean, it could just be a very simple matter of, you know, when you're in a state of being chemically dependent on anything, the truth is that your morals become challenged from time to time. So probably a lot of poor decisions had been made, not necessarily just in relationships or whatever, but I mean, the fact that, you know, she had to go into recovery means that there was, you know, a serious bout with alcoholism, which is, you know, is one of those things that morally challenges anybody. What I'm trying to say here is that nobody in this situation is a saint or necessarily a demon right away. I just wanted to make that kind of clear because, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, it was definitely I said it was definitely the dynamic of what was happening. You said that you guys all, they lived in the same apartment complex. So right. There was probably, you know, who knows? I mean, in that time too, in the 70s, things were a lot different than they are today. And I think that where I kind of want, I want to jump because we don't have, we only have, we're just doing the show for an hour today. So I want to jump into a little further in the future as to, as a teenager and coming into your teens and going to college and doing those types of things. What was your life like, Gabby? Did that stability roll over into you?
Let me just bridge a gap here real quick though, because, I had first found out that she existed, probably around the time that she sang, she went into daycare. This was explained to me not by my mother, but this was explained to me by one of my father's sisters. When that happened, I went to mother and said, well, where's my sister? And then had to have the entire thing explained to me. And I guess I was, I don't know, 8 years old. And I handled it and it was fine, but I wanted to know where she was. And at that point, up until only a very short time ago, had always had questions. And quite honestly, really wanted to connect with her, had attempted to do it several times over the years, despite whatever it was I was going through, always, quite honestly hoping that, she had not endured anything like I had, but wanting to, make that connection. And I think it's interesting to point out here that, her family dynamic evolved differently. I was considered, you know, my mother, my grandmother, everybody told me about how much of a mistake I was, even though I was the child who was born to the married couple, right? But interestingly enough, you know, with this man that comes into Gabby's life, I think it's good to point out that she had a bunch of siblings, which, you know, came from the coupling of this guy, Bill, and her mom. And, she's the oldest sibling there in that group over there, which is, interesting.
I wanted to ask about siblings.
Yes, I have, so I have five siblings. I have two brothers and three sisters. It ranges from my age, and then my youngest sister is 26. We're all very different personalities, but we're all good. But I want to say that, it's funny that you mentioned that my mother, why she was attracted and to someone like Frank. And also, you know, there's some chemical issues there. Yes. Just to give you a background, my mom's one of nine children and her father died when she was 15 years old of a heart attack. So, she does have daddy issues. That was right on. And I think they missed their father incredibly because my grandfather was an incredibly good man and, he did do well. He was, you know, he was financially stable. They lived in a fairy tale world, here in New Jersey. So, It was like the, you know, the Von Trapp family, if I have to liken it to anything. So, when her father was gone, that was a huge rift and really disrupted a lot of my aunts and uncles, just the trajectory of where they were going. I don't know, but it happened for a reason. Cause I guarantee if my grandfather was still around, I wouldn't be here. Cause my mother wouldn't have, I don't know if she would have been necessarily, looking for someone like our father.
Right.
Interesting.
I could be wrong.
Another interesting parallel there too is that, my mother basically in a 5-sibling household, effectively my grandfather died pretty young because, on the Irish side there, he had died pretty young because of, like a black lung sort of situation because he had worked in coal mines.
Wow.
So there you go. She lost him. I think she was 12 or 9. I can't remember which, either 9 or 12 years old. Same thing.
Crucial ages for women to lose that father image, that father role. And so, and so you can imagine what's gone on. What I find interesting is the different directions that they went. Because if I understand it, Chuck, your mom continued in the abuse cycle. Is that correct? She got involved with somebody who was abusive.
Well, not somebody, a string of somebodies. I had a string of father figure-esque individuals and stepfathers and, you know, mostly guys who taught me how to, how to cut up drugs and how to, fight with a knife and how to handle a gun and things like that. This was my upbringing. They were mostly, ex-cons or guys that were, you know, being picked up or getting raided or, you know, so on and so forth.
Your mom definitely, like I said, it seems like, and maybe it's the family dynamic, maybe it's, who knows what, you know, everything happens for a reason and maybe we don't understand them, but it seems like you guys were split into totally different directions.
Well, yeah, my mom, though, I don't know, I can't speak for Chuck's mother, but I know my mom came from a very well-to-do family, and I mean that in, they were all very well-educated, and I'm not wanting to put anything down, but sometimes I don't know if that plays a part, where the education, they were very big faith, you know, God was a very big part of their lives, there was just, everything was kind of, from her grandparents to her parents to all of her aunts and uncles, everyone did pretty well and quote unquote lived the right way. So for her example of what she should be doing, she had that example and I know she wanted to follow that. My mom has always been a very, very spiritual person too. She is a woman of faith and speaks about God constantly. So I know that's something that also helped her through all of her struggle, whether it be, you know, men, alcohol, and all the certain instances, things that had happened to her, throughout her early life. So I don't know. It is interesting that the two different directions that we split into.
Do you think your mom was more, because it seems to me that Chuck's mom really didn't have the family back. Like she didn't have, when the dad died, she was pretty much just left flanging. And
my mom had support. She had supportive sisters. She had people telling her, "This is what you need to do. This is you're going this way, but this is the way you need to be going." And she valued her family. So yeah, that might be the difference. I don't know. I just know that she did struggle a lot. I wouldn't want to paint my mom to be like, well, you know, off she went to Ohio and then everything was, you know,
peachy,
rainbows and unicorns. It wasn't.
Right. And I think
what's
interesting, and I guess that this is where I want to jump, is that as adults, Chuck has taken on a role as a freedom fighter, I would say. As far as standing up for the underdog, trying to bring things to light that he felt were unjust because he was subjected to so much injustice.
Right.
And what direction and what is it that you have taken from your experience and lived in your life?
Well, it's interesting. I in my opinion, Chuck and I are very similar. I too always fight for the underdog. And I was taught that from my mom. Growing up, if I fast forward from, you know, when my parents were married, I was kind of, I was a difficult child. I like to be a center of attention. I also had ADHD, so that was something that wasn't diagnosed until I was much later, but that was probably, an issue for, or the cause of a lot of my problems that I caused in our family. But I just was, I was a lot. I was a lot to deal with. I'm an intense person. So I wasn't easy and did well in school. I'm more geared towards art and music, and I love people. So I didn't do well in school, and so I chose not to really put any effort into it. High school was very difficult for my parents to deal with. All I wanted to do was just have a good time. I wanted to be with my friends. Didn't really care about school because it was difficult for me, and I knew I probably wasn't going to do anything in the future with anything educational. I didn't see myself going to college. So I was hard for my mom and dad, for a long time. So I would say right after high school, I barely graduated high school. I could not walk down the aisle with my class because I did not do well on a final exam. So they didn't allow me to wear my cap and gown down the aisle, but they said you can take a summer course and graduate at the end of the summer. So that's what I did. I graduated from Centerville at 1994, but I did it after, you know, the graduation ceremony. I had to take the summer course in order to pass.
Now, an interesting thing I'd like to interject here is that, okay, she graduates in 94. I graduated a few years earlier, in 91. I actually got to take my walk and all that, despite the fact that it took me an extra year to finish, high school because they didn't accept the credits from my time being incarcerated. And therefore, and this is all true, you know, it's a very weird sort of situation, but, she almost became legendary in my mind because nobody really wanted to talk about her, Gabrielle, to me. Nobody wanted to discuss it. It was like one of the family secrets. And, then I'm applying for benefits, to try and get things straight, to see if I can go to college, which I never did. But, when I applied, I attempted to apply because I thought my father's a veteran. He's deceased. I'm disabled. There must be something for me. And when I did so, somebody at the Social Security Administration accidentally let something slip when I was registering information with them. And, they said, well, you know, do any of these changes apply to anyone else on the file? And I said, well, as far as I know, no one else should be on the file. And they said, well, what about Gabrielle? And my knee-jerk reaction to any time it had ever been brought up, and I'd ever brought it up, is I know she exists, but I've never met her, which ended the conversation. I probably should have been a little more, you know, sophisticated about the way I answered that. Maybe I would have gleaned a bit more information. But that was the point at which I knew that that some of the stories I'd been told were absolutely correct, that she was verifiably somewhere. Honestly, that's another thing. I always, held it in my mind and told anybody who ever asked me when they said, you know, do you have any brothers or sisters? I would always mention her and then have to give that caveat. Well, I've just never met her. I don't know where she is, what she does, anything. But there's one that exists out there that is my sister. I don't know where, you know, blah, blah. So there you go. Go ahead, Gabby.
You have others.
Okay.
Right, Chuck?
No, I've gone through the process of trying to find out anything else or any trace of any others, and if there is any others, they would be extremely well hidden. I know that no more came from my mother, and I'm pretty sure no more came from my father, unless the only thing that I haven't been able to take a look at closely is there may be some Vietnamese children out there that share some DNA with me. That's a possibility. But other than that, I've pretty much exhausted it. So it seems as though it's just Gabby and I.
Yeah.
Okay. So Gabby, so you were not, you knew you weren't going to go to college. You weren't into all of that.
Right.
You kind of were the rebel doing your thing. And then what?
Right. Because I was not going to go to college, my mother, in a way sort of ambushed me, and I would always go out to New Jersey and be with my grandmother and all my aunts and uncles out here in New Jersey, and I would summer here every summer. So either she would come with us, my whole family would come out to New Jersey, or she would send me on a plane and I would just spend the summers with my grandmother. So It wasn't odd for her I think it was sometime in the fall. She said, you know what, why don't you go out and visit one of her sisters? And I said, fine, sure, I'll go.
Quick note on this though. Almost every time she's going to make these visits in New Jersey, she's probably about 50 miles away from wherever my location is at any given time. Right. She's going there for the summer. Nobody knows this, but that was what was going on. We sort of figured that out when we talked, but go ahead.
Right. Yeah. So in any event, I think I'm about 18, at this stage. So I go out and I'm there. And I call my mother and we're talking and I said, well, when I get back to Ohio, I think we were talking about what I wanted to do when I get back to Ohio. She says, well, unfortunately, I have some bad news for you. You're not coming back to Ohio. And I didn't understand. And she said, I just think it would be better for you to stay out there and try to do something with yourself out there. Because of my family's connections, she thought, if you're not going to go to college and you want to do something work-wise, well, that's the place to be. Because you're not really going anywhere here in Ohio. All you're doing is hanging out with your friends who come home from college or going to the colleges that are around here. And basically, all you're doing is just partying with them. You're not doing anything with yourself. So, I, much to my chagrin, I stayed in New Jersey and lived with my aunt, and then I lived with my grandmother. I ended up going to I'm going to say it's a glorified secretary school. It was called the Catherine Gibbs School of Business. And I basically learned how to become an executive assistant, which is like a secretary. So I did that and was able to get a job. I also bartended and I waitressed during that time, out here in New Jersey, and started to work. And I worked in New York and worked for an architect in New Jersey. So I did a few things, but nothing too crazy. And then I ended up meeting my husband.
Surprisingly, we didn't bump into each other, cause she could have possibly bartended one of the places I was playing, cause I was a musician at the time, right? Throughout New York and New Jersey, yeah. Especially. And in fact, wound up living in New York City almost at the same time that she was spending a lot of time there too. Very weird, right? How it is these things track together. Just kind of pointing out the parallel as she's going through her story. Go ahead.
But it's interesting.
Yeah,
I think still moving in the same direction. Yeah. Keep going. Sorry.
Well, and to that point, Sherry, I find it very interesting that Chuck and I are very, very similar, and that for all these years we've been very similar, and this whole, so there is something to be said about, I guess our connection, albeit from afar or separately, we had a connection. It would have been nice to know that all these years. Perhaps that was the plan, because maybe if Chuck and I knew each other back in the day, then it really could have gotten crazy. So maybe that was meant to be. I don't know. I'm here. I was here. I was working, doing a few things here and there. And then I ended up, my aunt introduced me to, the tennis pro at her country club. And my husband was a tennis pro at the time. And we met and kind of it fell into place from there. I will have you, I'll say this, that, my husband and I had a very tumultuous relationship. So it's interesting because my mother and I are very similar in the men that we choose. My husband is not a real crazy guy, but we didn't always get along. And, for a very long time before we ended up getting married, we were constantly in and out and together and not together. He is 13 years older than I am. He also had been married before. He had no children with his ex-wife, but he had been married before. And, we actually ended up getting pregnant on purpose with our first son, before we were married, and which my mom was extremely upset about, but she didn't send me away or wanted me to go anywhere. She just said, I thought you might have learned from what I had to go through. But in any event, everything did work out, so to speak. We're married now. We got married when my son was two, and then we've had two more children since then. So I wouldn't say that everything's been perfect, but it happened the way I guess it should have happened.
Well, I don't know, Gabby. I have totally smooth and calm relationships. I can't say that with a straight face. So, you know, we did actually wind up sharing some things where, you know, you see she's talking about this connection and not really describing it. Very personally, we sort of started talking about each other's gut reactions to things, about the way mm-hmm. that we perceive the world around us in a lot of ways. And it turns out that, again, even though we were carried in two totally separate wombs and we only have this, you know, this link of our father, whom she never met, or in all likelihood never met, you know, or could not possibly recall meeting anyway. How about that? The reality is that there is still some commonality between us, which I find kind of strange. Because she's sort of, you know, a soccer mom, kind of, or maybe more of a baseball mom, but a soccer mom, a baseball mom, and I'm...
football mom.
Okay, football mom, sorry.
Yeah,
a football
mom.
That's okay. You know, and...
I hate that description, I really do.
I know, but that's really why I just threw it there, to make you uncomfortable, just because I find that amusing. I figure you might as well join. You might as well join me.
That's okay.
With being uncomfortable.
That's good. That's good. We should be uncomfortable. It's good. It's a good place to be sometimes.
Exactly. So,
it's interesting that both of you, when I hear what you're saying, Gabrielle, it, even though you're at an age, you're at a point of where you've made it through most of the drama of life. I'm not saying it doesn't still come. I'm just saying that the majority, you know, our 20s, 30s, and even sometimes 40s for me have been interesting. And I am at a place, and I think you do come to a place of where you just kind of, things do just fall into place or they don't. You know, it's things are either going to fall into place or they're going to shift. And it's a lot easier when you're in that place to examine what's happened in the past and look at it from not such a triggered place. But I think one of the things that triggers Chuck, and one of the hardest things, is he's still living in it. And that's something that happens in, I don't know how to put this without it seeming, you know, when you're dealing with drug addicts and you're dealing with different types of behavioral upbringing, and kids grow up in that survival, because, I mean, listen, Chuck, you've said on this show, I mean, basically the boyfriends were coming in and out. They were obviously drug dealers. They were obviously doing things that weren't legal, and they're in getting you involved in it. You were incarcerated at a young age. I mean, you were made a hoodlum. You were like the perfect hoodlum kid. So, yeah. I mean, really, because they could get you to run for them. They could get you to do, you know, and you were in because you didn't know any different. Well, then when you pull yourself out of it and you're not involved in that anymore, what else do you have to grasp onto? You don't have the existence of, okay, well, my aunt and uncle, my this and that and all of these other things, they went to college, they did this, they did that. Or even if you do, it's like it's not even in the reality because you're still in survival. You haven't been given, you weren't given skills to live any other way.
You know, sometimes that shows up in my personal interactions, to be honest with you. I'm a little too blunt. You know, I'm a little too callous on occasion because of that, I think. But outside of that, I've done a pretty damn bang-up job remaining outside of that that prison, that psychological and spiritual prison that I started out in. You know, and this is something that anyone is capable of. You can extract yourself from any trauma, that, no matter how extreme it is. You know, you can be in that position of praying for death, and then you can be in that position of understanding that, releasing your fear of it and, truly seeking out, a more loving existence is worth it. Way past survival, going on into, you know, becoming what it is you want to be as opposed to what it is you've been forced to be. And there's never a point at which that you need to allow the ugly actions of others to scar the face of your reality. That's, you know, that's where I stand on it. So I don't feel as though I'm still living in it. It definitely is a part of me. And I will never be able to fully extract it from my being. but it does not define me. I don't allow that.
Find you at all. I think that it consumes you. I don't mean you as in you are. I'm talking about the reality that you live in. The way that as a truth seeker, as living in the way that you've chosen, you are not living the life of luxury.
No.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. There's two sides to that story. And so it's a vibrational existence. Because there's some people, and you and I both know this, because I'm in the same boat. This isn't a tag. This is how we have been living. And not having money and not having, and it's not having enough to survive, but it's being on that edge constantly of, okay, are we going to make it this month? Are we going to do this? Are we going to have this? Or whatever it is that in all reality, in most people's existence, that's not a question.
Well, you know, I don't know if that's the case because I'm not everywhere at all times, right? We can only really speak from our own perspective, and we can try and hear the perspectives of others, you know. So I don't know. Maybe I'm a little less gloomy than you. Isn't that strange about this?
Well, I don't see it really as gloomy. I see it more as, I guess where my point and what I'm trying to show is that our society has a certain classification for different lifestyles. And so if you're living in this way, then this is your label. If you're living in this way, then this is your label. If you grew up this way, then this is what you aspire to. If you grew up this way, you may aspire to something else, but it almost always cycles on that roller coaster of the highs and lows because we continue to experience what we knew. That's the, and so it's like in watching the two of you, because you come from the same seed, even if it's planted in two different areas, you come from the same seed. So the connection, you've seen it already. Both of you have said the similarities without even being brought up together are phenomenal. And on top of it, I'll bet you if you two were actually sitting in the same room, you'd find that you both have characteristics and movements like the dad that you never saw.
Yeah, that's I'm sure a possibility, but you know, the thing is that I'm sure Gabby would absolutely agree to what I'm about to say, which is that, you know, you cannot allow your labels to be your destiny or your destiny to be labeled. Okay. This is up to you, and every single moment is another chance to make a different choice. And that is exactly how I conduct myself and how I go further, no matter what the situation that confronts me is. What do you think of that, Gabby?
I agree wholeheartedly, and I do. And to a point where you were talking about labels, I know that's true in our society, but I do at times ask why. It honestly, it doesn't matter in the end. It just doesn't. And if you're a person who's always evolving, always trying to find your better self, then labels aren't going to be something that you're going to be focused on at all. It is hard for me to sometimes live in our society because again, where I live, yeah, there's labels and, I have to deal with it a lot. And I'm not that kind of person. And it really is a struggle for me at times to have to be and live in a community, in a society where, who you are, what money, who you're married to, what you look like, what your kids do, it's just because it's nonsense to me. It's nonsense. So it is hard for me to, and that's where I start to become very cynical and want to be antisocial and whatnot. Cause that's, I think that's where Chuck and I are very similar. And I try to always overcome, I don't like to be labeled a victim at all. And you could say through my experiences in my life, I could tell you things that have happened to me that could bring me down. And I have made countless choices that have probably put me in a position to, have less. And for whatever reason, I have, been a survivor and always struggled to, overcome, whether it's been self-inflicted or something's just happened to me, I have always tried to overcome it. And I don't know where, you know, again, that's something I think is also very similar to Chuck and I. But I do agree with you, Chuck. I think that's spot on.
Well, I think it's interesting that I agree with that 100%. I think you do make choices, but I think we still live in our society. One of the things that I'm trying to bring to the consciousness of people is how we are in creation of our reality. And that's a tough one because as much and as as much as we pull apart, and this is what I'm finding for myself just as much, is you pull apart from society because I feel the same way. I can't play in the labels anymore. I can't play in the games anymore. I can't relate in the society that is so structured out of a banking system. It's like playing Monopoly 24/7. So right. I don't want to do that anymore. And in that, the separation of all of those labels, the ego, in my life, those labels have been the ego that I have used to survive. Those were the things, you know, becoming a lawyer, becoming a radio host, becoming a healer, becoming, being whatever it was outside of myself. When I start to let go of all of that and letting it all fall back, the money system falls apart, but it also is a point of the vibration within me. Things start to flow in a way that is different than what I've experienced before. In my mind, I always had to work hard or achieve or make sure that I had enough. When I finally put up my arms and was like, okay, that's enough. Now it's going to flow through me and releasing those anchors that were put in as a child. Right, all that crap that I dealt with as well, all of a sudden, things are shifting. And so in watching the two of you in the dynamic, it seems like I've watched Chuck completely do a flip side of what he experienced, but still keeping some of the perspective, probably on a healing aspect, where you've done it the same, but almost from a different base, a different ground, because like you said in the beginning, your family was educated, had money, this and that. And it's not about the prestige or the labels. It's about the consciousness. When you are submerged in drug deals and poverty, and that is flat out survival. You are just surviving to make it on this planet.
Right. And I agree. I think the example that I had, you know, from day one, and that whether that's that, you know, wasn't always my mom. I don't know if she was always the best example. I think for the most part she was. But she probably gave me countless bad examples too. But for the most part, you know, my family was a good example. The blueprint was there for me to take, and it was my choice whether you want to follow that blueprint of where your family, what your family has done, the examples they have set, or you don't. And I think I've dabbled in both. You know, I said, yeah, sure, I'll conform to what you guys do. You guys seem to be successful, happy people. And then on the other side, I didn't. And I made choices on the other side. In the end, obviously, I think the difference with Chuck and I obviously is yes, where we came from and the examples that were given to us. And for Chuck to have grown up in the situation that he did was, that's probably because Chuck, you're such a smart person. And it's crazy that was lost probably for so long because no one really cared.
Well, and that's what we've done shows. I mean, that's one of the things. Chuck hasn't been, I mean, because there's so many people that come on air with so many problems and issues, I feel like, Chuck, that you've shared some of that with us as far as the upbringing was rough and the responsibility of rearing yourself and also being submerged in a place where some and a lot probably wouldn't have survived. So, you know, I mean, that's just the truth of it. And so this has been such a great experience for me to get to know both of you and see both sides and see the interaction. We are at the top of the hour. It's 5:00. And unfortunately, our time is limited because of some personal issues and some things that are going on. I would love to have you both back on and continue this discussion and get some more interaction between the two of you, because I think that you two are very similar, and I think that you would continue in conversation to find out more and more that is true. So it's been a great pleasure, and I really appreciate both of you coming on. Again, this is the top of the hour, so we will be back in a while, but Gabby will not be coming with us. Chuck, I haven't even talked to you about staying on, so I'll talk to you during the break.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sherry, for having and Chuck, you know, love always talking with you. It's been too long and that's more my fault. So we'll connect on a different time. I'll give you a ring.
Great. Looking forward to it.
You were great.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Oh, it was my pleasure. It was so much fun. I'm glad I do. And I'm hopefully we can do it again.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Chuck O'Chalik and his sister Gabrielle here with us, and I felt like we just barely tapped into the surface of this connection, and so we are going to have them both back on. But meanwhile, for the next hour, Chuck is staying with me, and he's going to be able to answer some of the questions I have, I think, and maybe some of the gaps that got left there can be filled in a little bit as far as what I was meaning by the upbringing and how it is that when you look at even in the rebellion of your sister's life, you, to me, it would be like a comic book to her or a story that she would read about.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we both were rebellious on each of our paths. You know, again, never having contact with one another. She was kind of she was sort of a legend to me because, my aunt had told me, my mother had to admit, my grandmother later on said that, at one point she had, you know, some picture of her very early on, but, had no idea where it was, but my grandmother would always counter among, you know, the many grandchildren she had. She's got a lot of cousins she's never met, by the way. You know, and it was an interesting thing for me because for nearly 40 years, I had just this idea of a sibling in my mind. You know, when I was very young, I very much wanted her to be there with me. But as I got older, I was kind of grateful that she wasn't.
I wanted to jump into that a little bit because you lived a very lonely childhood, in my opinion. I mean, yes, there were people there. I'm not saying that you were alone. I am saying lonely as far as connection and as far as you are a caring person and you do have a caring heart. And so I would imagine that you would have caretaked her more than you were ever caretaked.
Well, that was kind of the idea I had in my mind is that, you know, I didn't know of any other type of existence. So I thought to myself, I hope she's protected because, I would have, certainly sought to do that. All these things that I had in my mind, for somebody I'd never even laid eyes on was kind of interesting. And as far as the lonely childhood thing, sure. I mean, I've even described how pretty much the talk radio, you know, the transistor radio, if you will, was, practically my best friend because, you know, the rest of that world was, you know, the undercover world, if you will, the underground world. You know, and it was that kind of existence. So it's not unfair to say that. It's kind of strange connecting with her now. And it was the weirdest thing too, because it was just totally out of nowhere. None of the attempts to try and get a hold of her, because I made several. Over the years, inquiries. I at one point paid a private investigator. I had asked questions of other people who could do searches, with limited information I had. I had a couple of things wrong. But that was only because they were verbally given to me over the years. And again, the family for the most part didn't want to discuss it. And I had never encountered her or her family anywhere. So I had, you know, just these vague recollections that I sort of had to, you know, interrogate people to get, in a lot of cases. And, you know, again, even the whole thing about, well, you know, her mother was the mistress. And I said, well, there was lots of women. You know, I even wound up running one of them down, a couple of them down, actually, later on in life and having them tell me stories about my father and all kinds of stuff. I sort of had to reconstruct a lot of things myself. It was really weird. Again, always having this sort of in my mind that there's somebody out there that is related to me, somebody out there that I could have a connection with, somebody out there that could be like family to me when I didn't really have that,
right?
You know, normally. So it was a bit odd. So I guess, you know, I kind of had that not a fairy tale idea, but kind of an exaggerated positive idea about how that could go and what that would mean and all that kind of stuff too. You know, different stages of my life, different ways, right? You know, and, watching other people interact with their siblings, even though they couldn't stand most of them, you know, oh, I can't stand my brothers and sisters and blah, 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 blah. But you know what? When it comes time to, you know, get bailed out of jail, or, you know, or you're stuck somewhere and there's no way you can get out of a situation, sometimes you can call one of those people. And even if you two, can't stand each other generally, they'll still pull you out of the fire. They'll still be there for you. And likewise, they'll still call you in the middle of the night too. And I never had any of that. So, you know, I always thought of it as, what are you complaining about? You have a connection to somebody that was granted to you, and that you got to, you know, grow up around and be in the proximity of and have a shared experience with. And even if it was miserable, you know, at least you got a witness. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. And it's almost like you can build an alliance. I can remember as a kid, I didn't have siblings myself, but I did have an aunt that was close in age. And at times when I would go to my grandmother's, if there was anything that was going on, her and I would huddle together somewhere. And not having siblings, I know exactly what you mean as far as not having that. Do you think that that made you stronger in some ways? Because if you take a look at some of the things that you've aspired to do, it is that kind of savior of the people, the masses, protection, you know, letting people know the truth, trying to pull people and reel people in who are in poverty, who are in the struggle, trying to give them hope in all different directions. I mean, that seems to be a big part of what your goal is. So it makes sense to me that that would be a big part of the childhood as well.
Well, you know, I guess in a way, being in an isolated kind of position, you tend to take up the idea that, look, if I can do this on my own, if you have the most minimal of support, you're ahead of me, you know, and refusing to be a victim. I was struck by the fact that she made that statement, because that's something that I talk about all the time. You know, don't embrace the victim modality or mentality. You know, because it is absolutely counterproductive, does nobody any good. And, you know, I just don't believe in defeat. You only are defeated when you surrender, essentially. And I don't know, it's odd that coming from a completely different background, she kind of has a very similar attitude. So, you know, and I'm actually happy with that.
I thought it was interesting that she had a similar attitude. She also had some similar voice tone qualities. There was some, I could feel that you searching in that connection and her striving for that connection, you guys actually have something that's deeper than probably either one of you have even, you know, recognized or know about yet. But it's, you didn't have any siblings. I wanted to go into more about her connection with the other siblings, because she said they all have very different personalities and she was kind of the wild one. So I wonder if she felt lonely and kind of outcasted because they all had the same mother and father, you know, even if it wasn't intentional.
Well, I don't want to spoil her story too much, but I do know that she didn't find out about me until much later in her life than I found out about her. So she just, you know, you could talk to her about her perceptions. I think she ought to address that, but I think you'll find it interesting what she comes up with hearing about me at about the age of 20, as opposed to me hearing about her at about the age of 8. You know, there's a bit of a difference there.
Quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. And, you know, again, coming up in a situation where I'm just one of this set here, and then, you know, being told, well, you're actually a little different. I don't know, that's a dynamic that I can't even wrap my mind around, you know, because again, I was the singularity. So this would be something she'd have to speak to.
Well, and don't you think it's interesting? I mean, if she did always feel different and alone or whatever, which we didn't get into, and I'm not saying that she did, I'm just questioning that. It would be interesting to see, once she did find out about you, if she did feel that almost relief or a knowing, just like you said you had.
Well, and the odd thing was that, again, I didn't have the right last name for her, because she had taken on the last name of, you know, the guy that married her mom. So I had the wrong last name when I'm looking for the childhood record of her, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. And then the approach here was actually, here's the funny thing. I usually curse Facebook, but the approach was actually made on Facebook, where just like a friend request was dropped to me. And I'm, you know, I get a lot of those and I accept most of them. You know, when I'm pretty accessible. I don't, you know, I turn around and purge my friend list every once in a while. But quite honestly, I accept just about anybody and, see what it is they have to say or whatever. And, I accepted this one, looked at the name, and I said, you know, I actually have a sister named Gabrielle that I've never met. That was my first, word to her. And she said, well, I'm glad you started this conversation, because I had no idea how to begin. And I responded, am I communicating with who I think I'm communicating with? And she said, yes. I said, okay, what do you want to do?
You know? Wow. And so she actually was the one who found you.
Oddly enough. And before she talked to me, here's the thing that kind of made me nervous too. Before she talked to me, apparently she checked out the radio shows and things like that, and decided to show a picture to her mom because I had posted a picture of my father on Facebook. And when she went looking, she found that. Took a look at the fact that my one son is named exactly the same as my father. Okay. And said, oh, this must be who this is. And kind of had to show it to her mother. And her mother said, yeah, that's your father. And yeah, that's very likely his son. So this is how this went down. I didn't know any of it, and I was a little bit nervous by the, one of the first questions was, have you listened to the radio show? And it was like, yeah, a few. I said, uh-oh. you know, because this is not, you know, not in the normal realm of people's understanding sometimes, you know, what it is that we do, especially those of us that are not, you know, out there doing a video game breakdown or critiquing their favorite TV show or talking about restaurants online, right? If you're doing that, you know, you're kind of normal. But when you're doing the kind of stuff that I do, you know, you're often seen as the lunatic, right? So I was like, uh-oh, she thinks I'm nuts, you know, and God knows whatever else. And there was no judgment, though, in the conversation that we had. We had kind of a nervous sort of thing where we went back and forth and exchanged information. Still have not seen her face to face. Just over the phone and, pictures and conversation and things like that. And I sent her some extra pictures of my father that I happen to have, cause I thought she would appreciate them. And that's pretty much where it's gone so far, as we're sort of breaking this down and comparing notes, and I'm filling in some of the legendary stories she's been given, and we're balancing things out back and forth. So that's where it really stands. So you're dealing with something that's not comfortable for anybody yet.
I love that. And it's kind of interesting because I did notice that there were some gaps, again, that even she seemed to have that were being filled during the show in that short amount of time. And so I can imagine that as you continue to communicate, you'll find out more and more. Because one of the things that I don't mean to just sound harpy on, but it seems like if your dad was having these affairs, I mean, with a woman in the same apartment complex, she takes off, he goes to visit her. It seems like your mom had to have some idea of something, right? Or no?
Some idea? Okay, that's even funnier than you can imagine. The first time I got to know what the feel of pepper spray was when my father took me, to go see her mother. And my mother then called the police and this and that, and there was a whole thing going back and forth between them. And my father didn't want to open the door for the police, pretty much threatened the cops because that's the kind of guy he was. Eventually he opened the door. They wind up jumping on him, pepper spraying him. My mother jumps over a cop onto her mother, and they get into a fight. And meanwhile, I'm right there. And, you know, the big concern was, did the little boy get it in his eyes? You know, she knew.
Wow. I mean, that is so awful in some ways, and also so of that time.
Yeah, and Jerry Springer-esque, since you mentioned it earlier. So there you go. There's your Jerry Springer moment, if you guys were looking for it.
For real. That's like, and I mean, I think every family has that kind of stuff, and especially if you have young relationships. People in relationships in their 20s, it seems, are insane.
Yeah, well, my mom is like, 19 years old at this time that I'm talking about. Her mom is probably, you know, 20, 21 maybe, you know, at the time. And my father was, let's see, maybe 20, 22, somewhere in there, right? Wow. You know, and
I mean, you think of, I mean, I have children older than that, and as much as, like, I would, you know, I do think that my 27-year-old daughter would be completely capable of being a mother, and I think she'd be a great mother, but she's not ready for that, you know?
I mean, no kidding.
And so you take a look, and you've got these young kids having kids. They don't even know. At that time, it was just kind of what I think people did, but it's such a massive influx of what we see going on now, I feel like, because...
Well, again, but see, but look, let's snap this into perspective. You're talking about the very beginning of the 1970s. You've got a wholly different atmosphere when it comes to sexuality than you do today. You've got, very young guys having faced death in Vietnam returning, my father being one of them, definitely PTSD'd out. And all that kind of stuff. And what are these guys going to do, man? They're going to live their lives and they're going to, party a bit when they get home. And, so my father's there in 68, returns in, 69 or 70. And, and here we go. I'm born in 72. She's born in 76. This is the way of things. If you think about it, it's a different time period. You know, and again, when you got people that are facing death and other people that are opening up their minds and challenging the social norms and constructs and all that coming together, what do you expect? And I'm not making excuses for everybody here because there's all kinds of mess. She's talking about her mom was a person of faith and all that. Well, you know, truth be told, my family is Catholic all the way around except me and my father. My father rejected the Catholic Church, but my family is basically Catholic, both sides of it, and sending their kids to catechism and Sunday school and whatever else they do there, confirmation, communion, I don't know. I'm mixed up on their rituals anymore. I used to know them better, but it's this whole thing in this sort of bedroom community where you have a wide range of individuals who are from various backgrounds at that point. The financial mix is interesting there. There's very, very poor people, and then there's well-to-do people, all in very close proximity to one another, not separated very well in this area of New Jersey we're talking about. So, and my existence was a poor existence, but the family was not in bad shape. It's just that once my, mother decided not to abort me, which was a big row, apparently, it was like, well, then screw you, do it yourself. And that was the way it went. If she had chosen to abort me, she could have lived a much more comfortable life, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, like I said before, I was deemed a mistake later. But it is what it is. This is a different dynamic than what we're used to, especially today.
Yes. And I think, too, it's interesting to me how, again, your mother, where was her family in all of this? What was happening? You said that her father also passed young.
Well, right. And she had also been a juvenile delinquent. She actually required she got married at 16, right? She actually required the permission of her, I forget if it was probation or parole officer, in order to be married. That's the truth. If you're, in probation or parole and you're asking for, special circumstances to get married early, you used to have to require them to sign off on it. And, that indeed was one of the people that signed off on their marriage. So, you're talking about somebody who was kind of a wild child anyway, who had, lost the father figure, was the only girl in the family, actually, because she had two older brothers and two younger brothers. And her mother worked very hard, but they had a very good, sort of middle class life, from my grandmother basically being a nurse, if I'm not mistaken at the time. And, each one of these things comes into play for sure, but there's no telling what happens when you mix people together and God knows what their real motives are. I mean, why is it that, my 20-year-old father was knocking up my 15-year-old mother? Because do the math, she was 15 when I was conceived, right? You know, and wouldn't that be an issue nowadays a lot more than it was even then? I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe or maybe not. I mean, it depends on, I think in that time, it was the hope of the parents if, you know, if she got married, she would settle down kind of thing.
Yeah, probably.
You know, and at 16, 15, 16, 17 years old, now they're looked at as children. I mean, I look at my children that way. But in those days and in that time, I think it was different. I mean, my mother was also really, I mean, super young, you know. And so maybe
but again, snap to the Vietnam War culture. You're 18, 19 years old and you're in the middle of a rice paddy with a machine gun. I mean, you know, that's a little different.
And you come back to a society that, I don't, you know, whatever was going on then, you weren't a hero, and yet they were still sending them off, and all of these things were going on. And so to just be normal in society, I think a lot of these men came back, got married, started a family, and then came almost to their senses, not saying that they didn't want those things, but, you know, they're so young that they didn't really have an idea of what that even meant.
Well, so young and so damaged, you know, not to mention the 58,000 bodies that came back, you know, in bags from Vietnam. Let's put that aside. There was over 1 million men either mutilated psychologically or physically during that time. And look, I'm well aware of the fact that the Korean War numbers are actually higher when it comes to the wounded and the dead. But reality of the time, once again, you're engaged in a war in Southeast Asia. You know, 1968 is the year that Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King Jr. are both assassinated. This is a different time in, you know, in America. I'm sorry. It just is. So, you know, it's very difficult to judge that snapshot over the course of those few years there until the Vietnam War ended, in my estimation. And it sounds like I'm making apologies, but I'm not. I'm just trying to state the facts and put this in context. You know, so this is a...
It's not an excuse. It's to me, I guess what I'm seeing more and more is that we end up, in some ways, handing down, like you got handed down more from the mother. Obviously, you were young when the father passed. There is something that was handed down than the connection between you and Gabby. But there is, and obviously you got to spend more time with him. I mean, you got to actually be connected to him, do things with him. He took you places, that type of thing. And so I would say that that connection must be stronger, but there's got to be something also of once he's gone that it has to have a deeper impact. She never had it, so.
Well, right, right.
Does that make sense?
No, well, to her mind, again, you know, this guy Bill is the one who raised her, and again, until she was of adulthood, she didn't know any different. So this is, you know, unaffecting to her trajectory at the time. You know, it then takes effect when she finds out, you know, the true story and all that. You know, although I got, you know, some of those nice experiences, I also got to see what it was like for him to be, you know, terrified in the middle of the night. And I'm pretty satisfied that I probably watched him withdraw from certain narcotics. I'm satisfied that I saw a lot of violence that he committed against other people, including my mother, which, you know, never had he laid a hand on me. But our father was also very quick-tempered, you know, an extremely a ferocious fighter, if you will. You know, not an easy to deal with human being. So believe me, I got to see a lot of different things that maybe she had the blessing of never having experienced as well. You know, so there you go. I mean, there's and still there is that odd connection. True. See, and that's what I was worried about, tell you the truth, because to my mind, I thought she had actually grown up much, much better, given the idea that I knew her family had some money in this kind of thing. But her mother, I did not know, was sort of put off on her own. I thought, you know, they sort of just got her out of the way so that there would be no public scandal, you know, in the town square kind of deal. Because that's the way it was presented to me in the first place. You know, so there was a different trajectory there. And I was worried that she might be a little too normal to be able to handle, you know, what it is that I do, where it is I've come from, and I just might be a, you know, a big bag of crazy that, that she would really want nothing to do with after she, you know, got a little taste. That was one of the things that really concerned me, actually, when we started to, you know, have that Facebook conversation I was describing to you.
Well, I don't think that that's a concern. I mean, listening to both of you, and I don't think, I think that she was very, she was very giving as far as the story, and I don't think that she was unauthentic in any way. She was beautiful. But it also, it's just chipping at the top layers of things because, you know, we didn't have a lot of time, but it was, I'd love to hear some of the stories, I think, because, you know, she said that she did make the right choices in some directions, but she also made different choices. That being the kind of rebellious side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I question as to how connected she really felt and how similar you both felt, even though she had all these siblings and she had the lifestyle, and obviously she's doing well today, but I wonder how lonely she felt. The same. Do you know what I'm saying? The same dynamic, even though it was a different story.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, again, there's still a kind of an odd awkwardness between us. So, you know, I would not pretend to speak for her and what and goes on internally with her. I would say that it won't be a very simple thing to examine. She's got complexities in my estimation similar to mine. So, you know, we don't just go with the yes and no and black and white answers.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. There's a lot of nuance to all this. And it was worrisome for me, though, because I thought to myself, you know, when I went and, you know, started to examine her Facebook page and see what, you know, little facts I could glean, and I saw, you know, her kids, and I saw, you know, where she lived, and, you know, her sort of general postings and things like that, I said to myself, oh, man, you know, this is somebody who's going to just absolutely think that I'm nuts. You know, and you know when you see those sorts of people, when you start talking to them about anything that is not, you know, what the latest, American Idol is or, you know, or the pop music station, because that's at least calm and, you know, very, structured, you know, on the radio and, you know, they have their TV time and all that. And that's their life, right? It almost looked to me like, That was who I was going to be dealing with, and I said to myself, "Oh no, you know she's just going to think that I'm just way past insane." And it turned out not to go that way, which I was really really thrilled about. But this, still, there is this awkwardness, and you know it's going to be there because I made statements to her right away, like you know I basically spent almost 40 years. Thinking about this conversation. I want you to know that, you know. You know, and I hope that we'll be able to have many of these if we can. It's an interesting experience for me because this was one of those, you know, before I die, you know, please let me resolve this. This is one of the almost the last thing on my list, actually. That I wanted to be able to interact with my sister. And I told her that too, you know?
Well, and like you said earlier, and I thought this was a fascinating way of putting it, she was almost like a mystery or a,
I said she was kind of like a legend because, you know, you hear.
That's perfect because.
Yeah.
You could make up anything you wanted on one hand, but again, always in search. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, well, look, with limited information, you're going to fill in gaps and you're going to make assumptions, which I did. But anytime I tried to, you know, enlist anybody's help, I used to always say, you know, look, this is what I know and this is what I guess and this is all I got. You know, it was very limited. And so there was a lot of things. And I think the legend building is more in the emotion of it. Because, you know, you hit the nail right on the head where we have, what would it be like if, right? You end up asking yourself that question, especially when you're younger. Well, what if, right? You know, what would it have been like had I had a sibling who was supportive of me or something, or at least acknowledged me at certain points where, I was quite a bit left to only my own devices. You know, even with the different odd career paths that I've gone on, right, as a musician, there was never, you know, almost every musician I ever knew on a local level, they played a bar or whatever, their families would come. Their brothers, their sisters, their mothers, somebody would come. Twice my grandmother came to shows, but outside of that, I never had family there. It was people that I handed flyers to. You know, people that that I convinced to listen to my tapes, that I corralled into the bars to go hear my music. Right? I never had the or the girlfriend. You know, that was usually the closest associate that ever got dragged into them. And half the time, I didn't even like when the girlfriends went. So mostly, I brought strangers to the club, right? And other people would bring their families to fill out their ticket sales, their head counts. You know what I mean? Things like that. And you know, you wonder, what would it have been like had I had a sibling, had I had a close personal relationship with somebody? Well, in fairness, I had a couple of cousins go to a couple of shows too. But for the most part, you know, I wasn't one of these guys that was dragging their brothers, their sisters, their uncles to the shows. You know what I mean?
I do. I think it also, I mean, one of the things as an adult, having nieces and nephews and having dinners and, I mean, doing things that seem maybe not important or a hassle to some people when you haven't had that connection, mm-hmm. you, again, do that what if, I think.
Well, and there's another thing, too, right? I got two older kids. You know, I haven't really laid out family relationships to Frankie yet, but I've got two older ones, and each of them has been told, you have an aunt. I don't know where she is. I only know her first name, and I've never met her, but you do have one. You know, because their mother's an only child, and I am ostensibly an only child. But no, you have an aunt somewhere. You have one. I just don't know. I don't know, and I don't know how to find her. And maybe you can find her, in fact, later on if you choose, because I've tried. And I told each of them that. And I've told anybody who's ever asked me about my interpersonal family relationships pretty much, well, you know, here's the asterisk on mine, right? Am I an only child? Sort of. But there is somebody who exists who is a sibling. So, you know, that builds things in your mind and in your heart a little differently too, honestly. And, there's a lot of emotional stuff. When I first found out about this, actually, it was funny. I went on air and, was just, you know how I do a couple of like little asides at the beginning of my show where it's like, oh, well, this new story and this happened, and maybe I tell a story for 30 seconds. You know, I went to go get a cup of coffee and some jackass did this. You know, whatever. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yes.
So I go on air, and I had just spoken to her, and I started to talk about it, and I actually cracked a little bit. And the funny thing was that the internet conspired to destroy that recording because power was lost at AFR's base. My Skype went down. Everything went down. And the recording of those first few minutes on that show, we had to restart. And it was lost. The truth is that I had actually gotten choked up and unable to talk, which happens to me occasionally when I talk about my father. But for the most part, you know, I can usually keep myself pretty well composed. But it was completely spontaneous, involuntary, and I think there was probably about 5-6 seconds of dead air where I could not get a word out. That was exactly my emotional reaction after speaking with her. So, you know, there's a lot of levels to this, Sherry.
Well, that's interesting because you and I had actually talked about doing something like this at the time when we were both at the same station. And it was within 5 days that they decided that my show wasn't hitting the ratings and different things that they wanted and all of this stuff. And I thought it's kind of interesting. Not saying that that is completely related. I just think it's interesting that when things started to kind of lay out, everything got shut down.
Well, anyway, yeah. A funny thing, a couple of weeks later, what happened?
Yeah.
I left. So.
I mean, that's kind of where it went is it was like, okay, well, I guess taking the dive, and it's been, I have no idea, and I'm not wishing anything bad or negative. I don't even go there or look at anything, but I just think it's interesting that once you come to a certain place of like, okay, this is what we want to be doing. This is what needs to be happening. The growth has been tremendous, even if it's been chaotic for me. And I think that's true for you as well.
Oh no, look, I'm happy with it. Tell you the truth, a lot of things have gone on in the past few months that make me extremely happy. I was, asked to, present at the JFK Lancer conference this year, which I'm extremely happy about. That's never happened before. I've been to very few conferences in my life, honestly, and used to, steer clear of them, but I'm actually a speaker this year. Guess what I'll be talking about? The alternative media and the JFK assassination. I'm going to be sitting there on panels or among presenters who are military historians, lawyers, educators of all sorts, doctors, and I do mean like board certified radiologists, and meanwhile, you know, I'm the guy who got a high school diploma and couldn't go any further, right? But here we go. That's happening in November. I'm really happy about it. I'm trying to actually, you don't mind, I'll throw this out there.
Please do.
If people go to Ocelli.com, which is the home base now for what I do, other networks do stream the show live. Other networks replay the show. And, more than happy to have others join on to replay the show and all that, or to become part of the streaming setup. It's fine. The more the merrier. The only thing I ask is, don't edit the show. That's it.
Hey.
Other than that, it's all yours. And that doesn't include the breaks. I mean, you put in your own commercials or whatever. I don't care. But, the idea is that, I offer it and I'm the content originator. And, that's what I'm doing. Now, anybody who goes over there and contributes at this point, what you're doing is you're helping me get, bus tickets, because that's the way I'm going to have to travel. I'm going to have to put some of my paperwork in order, because apparently you need your ID to be able to travel. So I need a little assistance with that. And that's exactly what you'd be contributing to at this point if you go over there and make a donation or decide to sign up for a membership or whatever. And I'm a terrible pitch man, so this probably sounds like crap, but the fact is that, that's where that's going. And, I really, appreciate all the support that has been given to me, not just financial, but, just in the way of encouragement so far, being, fully independent and, on my own. I really appreciate it. And, so anybody that, that happens to be hearing this and has been a supporter, I say it all the time. Yeah, sure. The show is not really about me. This one tonight is kind of about me, or at least halfway about me, halfway about somebody else. But in truth, my show is not about me. I am Ocelli, and you, the listeners, and you, the participants, are the effect. So there you go. There's my plug. And I'll leave it there and continue to, open up my guts, for the rest of the show, Sherry.
Well, I enjoyed this a lot because I feel like I got to kind of see a little softer side of you. You're very caring. You always are, but I mean, it seemed you were very caring as far as making sure that she was covered and that she felt comfortable. And I appreciated that. I'm sure, I don't think that she's done radio before. And so it was kind of exciting to see her reaction, and she did great. She was like right at ease. I mean, it was like she was a natural.
And yeah, she did fine with it. I was actually a little surprised that she was going to reveal about as much as she did, but I was going to go to where she wanted to go. I certainly don't want a lot of people generate a bunch of hatred toward me, for things I say, guests I have on, positions I've taken, whatever. I mean, now they're calling me a CIA agent on, freaking Google Plus or whatever. I don't really care about any of that. And, and I laugh at death threats. I mean, this, but, the truth is I don't want any sort of, negative attention to be paid to, to her. I don't see why anybody should. But the fact is that, that was the only thing that concerned me here. is that I didn't want people to get too much information on her so that they could bother her. That's all.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think that she can handle her own. As much as I appreciate the fact that you do want that, and I think that she really got that as well. She knew that. But I don't have any worries about, after speaking to her and listening to her, I think that she's been through a lot more than she, you know, really put out there. I mean, she wasn't hiding it, but it was just the timing. And I think she's been through a lot, and I think that she is quite a warrior herself. So that you two have in common as well.
Oh, no, I agree with you there. But still, right? I'm very sure she could handle people just as well as I do.
Sure. I mean, she probably hasn't had quite the experience, I'll say. But, I don't have any worries. And I think that the other thing that I thought was fascinating is I really could feel the pull that she has and that you both have in wanting that connection, in establishing a connection that maybe was, that could have been and was lost at a time when you both needed it. So I think that'll be an interesting progress depending on both of you outreaching to each other and keeping the connection on a level of where it's open.
Say, Chuck, did you see my question there?
No, I didn't. You know me with the eyesight. What's up?
Has Dallas Goldbug spoofed you yet?
The Dallas Goldbug?
Yeah, you know who Dallas Goldbug is, don't you?
No, I don't.
Well Aware One?
I don't know anything about that.
Oh,
what?
My God.
No, I haven't had any trouble with that.
You haven't made it to the big time yet, then, until you get spoofed by him.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. Well, listen. There's...
He's the one that claims that someone is an actor for the elite secret society, yada, 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 you know. You know who Ryan D. Hall is, right? Ryan Hall?
Yeah.
Well, allegedly, according to Well Aware One, Dallas Goldbug, he is Jack Black.
Okay.
Yeah.
I try not to get into too many of these intrigues because you know how easy it is to get lost in, I don't want to disclose too much, but you know how easy it is to get lost in like the hacker world of individuals. And I'll say that there are guys out there that definitely are on my side that I appreciate very, very much. Okay, but I really don't like to comment on all that because I never know all the ins and outs. It's not really my world. I am not the most sophisticated guy when it comes to that stuff. Honestly, you know, you want to ask me about things that are in the National Archives. You want to ask me about certain other sciences. We can go, but I don't even begin to pretend to step into that world at all, man, because that's just it's just not mine. You know what I mean?
Well, I think we're gonna have, and this is just my opinion for as far as disclosure goes, and I think that you'll find this in November. Is that I think that the things that have been considered conspiracy or that have been considered too outrageous for people to consider or talk about, they are becoming more of the norm. They are becoming the reality. People are understanding. They're starting to see that it's truth. And so as things start to expand, it's going to go in both directions. You're going to have people that still try to feed and take people down a road of manipulation because that's how people are. So,
and there's a lot of this stuff floating around, Sherry, honestly, that is constructed either by the fevered mind of people that have issues, or by intelligence agencies to make sure that they keep us distracted. I did a show last night with Larry Hancock, which is, you know, look, that's not unusual. He's a JFK guy, whatever. But his latest book is called Unidentified, which is about the national security state's reaction to UFOs, okay? And we discussed the disinformation campaigns and the stuff that has been, well, generated in order to keep people distracted in that arena. We briefly touched on some of the stuff that has been purposely generated to keep people away from the realities when it comes to stuff like the Kennedy assassination. You know, I didn't discuss it with Larry, but look, all this applies across the board. There is a lot of disinformation meant to keep you busy so that you're not turning toward the things that you can really sink your teeth into. That being said, there's also a lot of things that are, you know, where reality is stranger than fiction. There's also a lot of that to be had as well. And I'm hoping that, we're gonna get a better handle on it and start to come around to a greater consensus among people in general is what I hope, Sherry.
Well, I mean, I always have that hope as well. And I'm optimistic. I'm also a realist in some ways. And I look around and I see what's happening in our society. And I do think that things are moving. I do think that people are starting to have more consciousness. I don't think that it's hitting the masses the way that I had hoped. It was maybe too much on my side, you know, with the eclipse and everything else. You know how weird I am. I really was expecting some serious disclosure. I thought if this is the time when everybody's looking up at the sky, this is the time to do it. You know, let something be seen by everyone that's looking.
You know, and I was totally amazed by the fact that you said there wasn't much to that. I found that remarkably strange, Sherry.
Disappointed.
What's that?
I was disappointed. It was beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I had the little glasses and I did the little thing. I thought it was fine.
No, but it wasn't just fine. I mean, do you know that people in various parts of this country all reported that nothing seemed to make a noise except the bugs at that particular time? You know, that there was a very, very still sort of a stillness all around them when the eclipse actually occurred, depending on, I mean, and we're talking about people that, I mean, I've got at least 5 observations from 5 different points where we were counting the time, and of course, I was more accurate about what time it was going to happen than they were telling us in the local news. But, you know, it was pretty interesting, actually, to observe the energetic reaction that occurred during that eclipse. I know it wasn't, you know, spectacular and there weren't aliens coming out, you know, from the rim of the moon or the sun or the spaceship or, you know, the Black Knight satellite. But I think that there was something that was to be observed and to be enjoyed there that was unique for that moment.
Oh, I think it was beautiful. I mean, as far as beauty and as far as it being unique and different, and I guess I am dramatic, you know that. I wanted it to go pitch black.
I had no idea.
And I had no idea. I know. It's a shocker for you. So in my mind, at 11, whatever it was, when it started to get dark, I'm like getting all ready. And I'm like, okay. We're going to have pitch blackness and then something grand is going to happen. Everybody's going to be shitting their pants and I'm going to be loving it.
You wanted to be jumping up in the air saying, yeah, I was right. I was right.
Yeah. I don't even care about right because I don't really know what it is. I just want it to be something way better, something way more like shocking to people. Like I want it. I mean, I don't care if it was aliens. I don't care if Jesus Christ came out of the moon. I wanted something dynamic for everybody that was watching to happen.
We should wrap it up, Terry.
Flying monkeys, tornadoes, and starbursts, right? I mean, that's what you were looking for.
I really, really wanted that. And I really wanted that so badly. And in my mind, I had seen it a few times. So when it didn't happen, I was like, motherfuck. Like, I did not.
Don't forget, Lori was in the chat room there.
Oh, I thought she'd be sleeping by now.
She's listening.
Okay, well, I take back that last one.
She's hijacked Sal's keyboard. There.
Funny. Oh, yeah, because her computer problem. Well, it just came down to, and it wasn't, I did feel, and really, I wanted to go into this more, and we don't really have time, because there's only a couple of minutes, but it was the after eclipse. My God, I had like a freak out. Did we lose Chuck?
No, he's still here, I think. Wait a minute.
No.
Yeah, he is gone. But we got to go anyways. Ed's coming up.
Oh, what happened?
I guess we did lose Chuck. I don't know.
What the hell? Okay. Well, I don't know what happened there. Somehow we lost Chuck. Everybody's having weird internet issues. And, of course, as soon as I start talking about the post-eclipse, that's when everything's going to really go to shit.
Exactly.
Because there was a lot that happened for people. And I want to talk about that on the next show because hopefully I'll be through it by then and have a clearer dynamic of it or a clearer view. And we can discuss a little bit more about how we felt and what was going on this week. So I love you all. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your weekend and enjoy your next week. Ciao.
Well, it's about goddamn time they wake up. Now, I've been talking about this since 1959, about the corruption, the incredible lies, deception of the entire superstructure of Western civilization, and the incredible treason, lunacy, lies, deception. It's just amazing how much has been done in the past 100 years to the human family.
That was Jordan Maxwell on the Ocelli Effect. For more pods with Jordan and Chuck, search ocelli.com, along with hundreds of other shows and topics as presented by Chuck Ocelli on ocelli.com. Thanks for listening.
Considering what the world is now, with all the misery, conflict, destructive brutality, aggression, tremendous advancement in technology, and so on, it seems to me, though man has cultivated the external world and has more or less mastered it, inwardly, he's still as he was. He's still brutal, violent, aggressive, acquisitive, competitive. And he has built a society along these lines. The more one observes, and I think almost everyone, unless totally blind, deaf, and dumb, is aware of the extraordinary contradictions of human beings. And to understand this extraordinary, complex problem of existence, one must have tremendous passion, not which cannot possibly be supplied by the intellect or by casual sentiment or emotionalism, or the passion aroused by committing oneself to a particular course of action, or belonging to a particular political or religious group. That does give a certain quality of intensity, a certain elan, a certain drive. But through it all, there is the demand for gratification, for pleasure. And the whole structure of society, with its morality, with its gods, with its culture, with its entertainment, is based on pleasure. So I hope, we hope, that you will so listen to what is being said. Not hear a lot of words, to a lot of ideas, because ideas and words are not the fact. Ideas and words never bring about a radical revolution, a mutation in the mind. So we're not dealing with ideas and opinions and judgment. What we are concerned is with bringing about a radical revolution in the mind, and that revolution must take place without effort. Because all effort has behind it a motive. And a revolution with a motive is not a revolution at all.
You die slow, knowing why you are dying. We'll be right back.
Yes, I'm better in my time. D-I-I-O. Well, you ain't to die. Don't let nobody sell you poison or lies. Get real honest info. Listen to the Ocelli Effect 5 days a week. And if you want more of the alternatives alternative, visit Ocelli.com and think for yourself.
Get ready for the Ocelli Effect.